lips imprinted on his shirt collar that didn't come from my kiss. He's hardly looked at another woman in the years we've been together. If the booze has led him to an affair, I've seen no evidence of it. And so what if he hasn't? What if, despite all his sins, he's stayed faithful? Does it even matter when he could be hiding so much more from me? In some ways, John has ruined me, tainted me, and covered me in stains that will never wash away. For the rest of my days, I will remember the ways he's defiled not only my body, but also my trust. If John has taught me anything, it's that I don't really know him at all. I don't even know myself anymore. And truthfully, I kind of blame him for that, too. But look at what you are doing. You're betraying him, too. And in the worst way. I've condemned him for so much, yet I'm no better, am I? I'm not without sadness for the fact that I'm losing my husband to a whiskey bottle and a game. Rather than being consumed by my red lips, it's the red poker chips that captivate him. He drank me in only to spit me out and replace me with a swig of dark, bitter liquor. And when he came back for me, he slammed into me like an empty liquor bottle on a table, demanding something from me I didn't have to give. A spark of anger ignites at the reminder that my husband has violated me in ways no man has the right to. Any shame that was circulating through my system dissolves beneath the weight of my husband's transgressions. He shouldn't be the only one allowed to sin. Would you like to see? I ask, staring up at Ronaldo through my lashes. I think this blouse would be a fine addition to the checkered pattern. I'm still nervous, but I've always been a confident woman, and something tells me Ronaldo would appreciate that about me. I grab hold of where his fingers are twirling a button, reveling in the roughness of his hand. He stills beneath my touch, watching me closely as I gently push him aside and pop the button free. I'm not sure what reaction I was expecting, but it wasn't for him to step away from me completely. I frown, embarrassment and shame punching me in the chest.
Sit down there,
he directs, pointing toward the dining room table. Utterly confused, my mouth flops. Did I do something wrong?
No, Mia Rosa. You could never.
His tone is deeper now, and my lips part when I notice the rather large bulge in his trousers. Oh. When I draw my gaze back up to his, he tilts up his chin and rolls his tongue in his cheek, staring down at me with a wicked look, daring me to test him.
You have 5 seconds before I...
Excitement replaces any ugly feelings I had moments before, and I pivot on my feet and do as he says. My hands tremble, though I couldn't blame my erratic nerves on anything but anticipation, especially as his footsteps echo from behind me, approaching me as slowly as he always does, like a predator stalking his prey, keeping himself hidden until the second he pounces. He pauses directly behind me, the back of the chair separating us. Another shiver racks my body when his fingers brush across my shoulder, when he slowly gathers my loose curls and lays them down the middle of my back. Then his lips caress the shell of my ear, evoking another tremor.
A queen has more important duties than undressing herself. Let me take care of that for you.
If I didn't know any better, I'd think the devil was on my shoulder, whispering to me in such a wicked way. My thighs clench, wetness gathering between them. I hold my breath as he reaches around and releases the second button on my blouse. Slowly, he unbuttons each one, ensuring the tips of his fingers brush against my flesh with every movement. All the while, I resist the urge to squirm beneath him. When the last button is free, he guides the soft material off my shoulders so I can free my arms from the sleeves. The brassiere I wear is the most flattering I own, with strips of lace over the silk, ensured to ensnare a man's gaze. Rinaldo's fingers trace over the lace, and though the material separates him from my bare flesh, it feels as if nothing is between us anyway. Toying with the zipper on the side of my emerald green slacks, he comments lowly.
I don't see very many women wearing these.
I saw them in a boutique and thought they looked interesting. I explain, the slightest tremor in my voice. With the war going on, many military and workforce women wear slacks for necessity and comfort. Now they're slowly becoming popular in society and popping up more often in boutiques. They're scarce due to the material shortages, which is why I couldn't resist purchasing them. I like to try new things, something that should be obvious given our current circumstances.
I think these would complement the tiling too.
He drawls, the glide of the zipper quiet beneath my thumping heart. The cotton material parts and droops, revealing my matching lace and silk girdle leading down to the straps, securing my stockings in place. Typically, I wouldn't wear them with slacks, but I had hoped he would undress me today, and I wanted to wear something that would make him lose his mind. A deep hum rumbles in his throat, his approval like fine red wine, intoxicating, and a taste I'd never tire of.
Lift up for me, love.
He orders gently, his voice lined with gravel. I obey without question, allowing him to slide my slacks down until they drop to my feet and I kick free of them.
Ravishing.
He breathes.
Nothing could compare to the likes of you, my love. You are the most beautiful flower and the rarest gem, more breathtaking than any of Earth's wonders.
He speaks to me more beautifully than anyone ever has before. My throat closes, utterly speechless over his proclamations. Reaching over me, he dives his hands between my thighs and brazenly spreads them. I gasp, and my cheeks burn hot when I see the evidence of my arousal so boldly on display. My panties are soaked, and the visible wet spot extends down my thighs, glistening under his stare. Embarrassed, I attempt to snap my legs shut, but he resists and only spreads my thighs wider. Rinaldo, I can't get a single coherent thought out of my mouth. I'm mortified that he's seeing just how he affects me. I've never had a reaction like this before, never soaked through my undergarments like this. It looks like I soiled myself, for God's sake.
You've made a mess.
He purrs, sounding delighted. That's not... I didn't...
I know, my love. Your cunt is weeping for me.
I bite my lip, a throb emanating from between my legs from his vulgar language. I've never heard a man speak like that to me. But my God, do I like it. And it is weeping and crying out for him, too. Will you touch me there? I ask boldly, needing to feel him almost as much as I need to breathe. He hums again, a response that's neither a confirmation nor a denial. His fingers drift over the strip of bare flesh between my girdle and bra, sending electric shocks scattering across my body.
I think I'm too curious,
he murmurs finally, his hands drifting over various areas, his touch sensual, yet evading everywhere I need him to be. About what?
How far you would go to feel me inside you,
he answers darkly.
And if, by the time I give in, you could drown me with your cunt.
He cups my face and tilts my chin up until I'm staring at him from upside down. Leaning closer, he brushes his lips across mine, teasing me until I grow impatient and capture them in a fervent kiss. His tongue greets mine for a second before he retreats, leaving me desperate for more.
When you become the ocean, I will gladly sink into you, Mia Rosa.
Then he pulls away, and before I can process what's happening, the front door shuts behind him, leaving me alone, and so very empty. July 7th, 1944. Rinaldo likes to tease. Only an hour after I sent Serafina off to school, he came to visit. After what I went through with John, I wanted to let go of that and replace those awful memories with new ones. So I told him to touch me. I begged for it. He resisted at first, but it didn't take long for him to concede. He told me to sit in my dining room chair. I followed his orders eagerly. He unbuttoned my blouse, then my slacks. He pulled them down and left me in nothing but my undergarments. His fingers whispered against my flesh, and he said beautiful things to me as he did. Dirty things, too. He smiled when he saw the desperation in my eyes. Yet he still denied me. He never touched me where I wanted him to, where I needed him to. His fingers taunted me, and then he left. It took everything in me not to beg for him to come back. One of these days, I won't be able to control myself any longer. Chapter 12, The Raven. August 14th, 1944. I've learned a lot about Rinaldo over the past couple of months, and while there are certain things he hasn't confided in me, such as his job, I've asked him just about everything else, except if he likes sweets. I pull the baking sheet from the oven and set it on the stovetop, staring at the chocolate chip cookies as if they're centipedes, something he confessed he's terrified of that might chase him away. They're just cookies, for God's sake. But what if he hates them? What if he hates chocolate? I should have made sugar cookies. I'm lost in thought, running through scenario after scenario, solidifying that baking for this man was a colossal mistake. Ever since he undressed me in the kitchen a month ago, we've been spending a lot of our days growing more accustomed to one another's touch, mostly kissing and heavy petting, as his refusal to take things further is persistent. Even still, my lips have been too darn preoccupied to ask him a simple question: do you like cookies? I'm so lost in thought that when a heavy weight lands on my shoulder, I belt out a scream that damn near shatters my coffee mug. Whipping around, I find Rinaldo standing behind me, his brows nearly in his hairline, in a mildly amused expression. Meanwhile, I'm standing frozen solid, stricken by his sudden appearance. I can't breathe around my thunderous heart lodged in my throat. In fact, I'm fully convinced I'm experiencing a heart attack. His smile grows, and it's enough to coerce my body to breathe.
Have those cookies insulted you, my love?
I deflate, shooting him a disgruntled look. No, as a matter of fact, they did not. Not that it's any of your business what warfare I engage in with sugary food. I snip haughtily, though my words lack heat. If anything, I'm entirely mortified. The mirth twinkling in his gaze is distracting, however, and I can't help but fall into some type of trance. He told me many stories about his days in the military, about the shrapnel that flew into his eye after a comrade standing beside him shot off his gun, unaware of the obstruction in the barrel. He said it caused the gun to explode and send shrapnel flying into both their faces. It completely blinded his comrade, but thankfully he was spared the worst of it. He was incredibly lucky that the shard was tiny enough that he didn't lose the eye completely, but the damage was still permanent. The light, milky blue color that has corroded his pupil isn't too much lighter than his iris, and it gives him such a peculiar look. Oddly enough, I find it incredibly attractive, something I also confess to him.
Baby,
He sounds amused. The single word pulls me out of the trance, and my cheeks instantly flush hot. You're just intent on making a damn fool of yourself today. What? I blink, and he's chuckling. The sound is pleasing to my ears as a Frank Sinatra song.
The cookies,
he reminds.
Are they for me?
He flicks his eyes toward them, and I follow his line of sight, having completely forgotten about them. Yes, I answer, though it sounds more like a question. Clearing my throat, I try again. Do you like cookies? His grin is less teasing and warmer this time.
I love them.
Relief rockets through me, and rather than continuing to stare at him like a goof, I spring into action. It takes 2 minutes to plate the fresh cookies and hand them to him, a wobbly smile on my face. I feel a little silly baking for you, I admit sheepishly. It's hard to cook for you without John's noticing missing food or random leftovers, but these will go undetected. I cringe, hating to bring up my husband. It's not necessarily a sore subject between us, but we often avoid talking about him. It hasn't slipped my attention that every time I say John's name, Ronaldo's eyes darken and flash with fury. For obvious reasons, he's never been thrilled about my having a husband. But after John hurt me, that contempt has transformed into murderous rage. He's careful to control the reaction, the emotion flicking through his gaze with speed. But I hate making him feel it at all. He leans forward and places a soft kiss on my mouth. Then he pulls away just a few centimeters, enough for him to whisper against my lips.
I've always loved cookies. Maybe because I enjoy eating things that are sweet and melt on my tongue.
His voice is so incredibly deep, and his tone is devilish. A shiver crawls down my spine, the salacious implication of his words not lost on me. It takes a few tries before I manage to swallow the rock in my throat. They're all yours to eat, I choke out.
Only mine?
He asks, stepping closer until his body molds into mine, my eyes ensnared by his. Yes, the word comes out as a squeak, and my cheeks burn, both from his proximity and my lack of control.
Good,
he rasps.
I'm starving, Mia Rosa.
Then the space in front of me is suddenly empty, and I'm staring at his back as he carries the plate of sweets to the island. He doesn't just walk away from me, he saunters. I narrow my eyes, a surge of determination and annoyance burning through any resistance I had for this man. You keep walking away, I snap. He pauses, turning his head over his shoulder to peer at me.
Are you gonna stop me, my love?
Why do you keep making me chase you? I parry. He stays quiet as he sets the plate on the island countertop, then approaches me again. He stops a foot away, deliberately not touching me this time.
Because I don't know that I'd handle it well if you ran away.
He responds simply. I frown, not sure I understand what he means.
I would follow you anywhere, Genevieve. If you were standing at the edge of the earth and wanted to fall, I would only stop you long enough to take hold of your hand so I could go with you. There isn't a life where I wouldn't be your phantom, or death where I wouldn't be your reaper.
He places his hand flat on my chest, keeping me at arm's length.
If you tried to run away from me, I don't think I'd let you. I would do anything to make you stay. And there are moments where I feel, where there are things that I want to do to you that might cause you to run. And I'm afraid of that, so I walk away first.
I grab his wrist and remove it from my chest, then step into him, inhaling his intoxicating scent. What makes you think I'd run? I ask, my voice hardly above a whisper. How do you know I wouldn't beg for the things you want to do to me? His upper lip curls into a snarl, and he glances away from me, just as his gaze darkens with feral desire. He's trying to collect himself, likely before he loses control. Yet that reaction alone has me unraveling at the seams, and I am no more in control than he pretends to be.
Genevieve,
he bites out, still refusing to meet my stare. I press myself into him, molding every inch of our bodies together. His eyes close, inhaling deeply as my lips whisper across his neck. You think you'll scare me, that you'll make me scream. Yet screaming for you is exactly what I would love to do, Ronaldo. He snaps, and before I can take my next breath, his hands are clutching either side of my jaw, and he's crashing his mouth onto mine. There's no process of losing my mind to this man. It's there and gone in an instant. I return the kiss with just as much passion, my hands tearing at his shirt, buttons scattering to the checkered tile. Once the tattered fabric drops to the floor, he lifts me in his arms, and I hook my legs around his waist as he carries me to one of the red velvet couches in the living room. I'm on my back as he settles over me, trailing his lips down my jaw before sinking his teeth into the delicate flesh beneath my ear. I arch into him, a moan unleashing from my throat. Ronaldo, I plead, needing more, needing all of him. He rips himself away to stare down at me, the two of us panting heavily, our breaths shaky and frenzied.
We will take things slow,
he orders. I'm shaking my head before he finishes, nearly blind with lust. If this man dares walk away again, I will
give you what you need, Genevieve. I won't leave you wanting,
he vows. He lowers his head to place a gentle kiss on the swell of my breast, right above the neckline of my dress.
But today will be all about you.
I'm selfish and want everything, but I'm desperate enough to accept anything from him, even if it's small. Uh-huh, I eke out, roving my hands over every part of him I can reach. His chest, his shoulders, down his arms. I want to feel all of him. He sits up, pulling me up with him. Confused, I watch as he sits down on the couch and spreads his legs. He taps his lap, a devilish grin playing on his lips.
Come, sit on my lap, pretty girl. Let me take care of you.
Chapter 13, The Raven, August 14th, 1944. My heart is beating in my throat as I climb onto his lap, facing him. I bite my lip, feeling his hard length pressing into my core. He feels so much bigger than I'm used to. Yet he doesn't seem interested in satisfying his own needs. Another thing I'm not used to.
Have you ever touched yourself?
He asks, his hands sliding up my thighs, eliciting a full body shiver. Breathing heavily, I shake my head. His hands pause at the junction between my thigh and pelvis.
Baby, tell me you've at least had an orgasm before,
he says, his tone nearly a plea. I don't know. How would I know if I have? His blue eye darkens to a color similar to the sound at the bottom of a cliff. A dark, stormy color that exhibits clear displeasure.
You would know, my love,
he answers, a mischievous curl to his lips. Now, I wish I had thought to touch myself. My mother never taught me anything about intimacy, and I never learned much from John either, other than how to fall pregnant. Sex has always felt nice, but there wasn't anything about it that made me feel inclined to seek that pleasure on my own. The glimmer in Ronaldo's eye suggests he's almost anticipating the absolute devastation coming my way. And I wonder if I have been robbing myself of something far greater than what John has always made me feel. His hands glide closer to my core, and a buzz forms beneath my skin, as if a million little bees have found their way inside me. I gasp as soon as I feel the pressure of his finger press against me, a little zing igniting from where he touches. A single touch, and he's already surpassed John. My lip finds itself between my teeth again, and I'm embarrassed to admit how wet I've become. I'm not accustomed to these reactions he brings out of me.
Your cunt is soaked,
he rasps, swiping his thumb over me. Even with a thin barrier between his flesh on mine, it has a visceral effect on my body. I'm 2 seconds away from grinding against him, just to see how much better this could get.
Is that normal for you?
No, I say, the words shaky and breathless. Should it be?
Only for me,
he responds darkly. He moves my underwear aside, and I'm unprepared for the jolt that rockets through me, or how utterly satisfying his touch is. A shudder works through me as he explores, swiping down my center until the tip of his finger prods at my opening. The sounds that arise should be shameful, yet sitting atop him with my legs spread open and his hand hidden beneath my dress makes me feel powerful. Instead of hiding from him, I want to display myself for only his viewing pleasure. And rather than have him wielding my body to his every whim, I'm keen to turn it against him, have him simpering while he pleasures me. A sharp moan releases from my throat when he drives a digit inside me. He groans, watching me carefully as I shudder around him. Holding his gaze, I reach up and slide one sleeve of my dress down my arm, then the other. I'm thankful I went with a light, breezy outfit today, making it easy for the top half to droop down my waist. Ronaldo pauses, his stare sharpening and bursting into flames. The reaction gives me all the confidence I need to reach behind me and unclip my bra, freeing my breasts. I roll my hips against his hand and peer at him through half-lidded eyes, injecting every bit of sensuality into my demeanor as I ask, "Why'd you stop?" His mouth parts as I glide my hands over my breasts, moaning as I grind against him again. A deep growl unleashes from his throat, and he's surging forward, capturing one of the hardened peaks between his teeth. I throw my head back as his hand resumes and adds a second finger, pumping them in and out of me with vigor. I was right. I completely robbed myself of pleasure unlike anything I've ever known, and I certainly won't be making that mistake twice. Ronaldo sucks harshly on my nipple, eliciting pinpricks of pain followed by steep bliss. Then his thumb presses against a sensitive part of me, and I'm unable to refrain from moaning loudly. He pulls away, popping my nipple from his mouth.
This is your clit, baby,
he explains, taking a moment to nip at my breast.
And if you rub it, just like this, you'll make yourself come easily.
I couldn't answer him if I tried. One of my hands dives into his hair, gripping the strands tightly, while the other clutches onto his shoulder. I whimper, my hips moving by their own volition. I wouldn't care if he were to stop moving. I'd do the rest myself. At this moment, he's a tool, and I will use him as such. However, he only works me harder, his fingers moving over and in me expertly, and with a skill that I don't know I could replicate. My stomach tightens, a knot forming as the euphoria rises with each passing second. It grows and grows and grows until I cannot fathom how this isn't an orgasm, how it could possibly feel any better than this.
Do you like the way I make your cunt feel, Mia Rosa?
He asks, his voice as rough as gravel and deeper than the sound beyond the cliff. Another sharp nip to my breast and I'm moaning again. Uh-huh, I moan, my eyes fluttering and my chest heaving.
Let me hear you say it,
he demands.
Tell me how good I make you feel.
God, Ronaldo, I whine. How could he possibly expect me to utter another word, let alone a full sentence? His teeth sink into my sensitive nipple, causing me to jolt against him, the pain flaring brighter this time. It was a warning bite, yet it backfired and only heightened my pleasure. I thought I didn't need him to make me come, yet I want him to. I want him to lose his mind as I say dirty things to him, words I've never spoken in my life. I want him to be so overtaken with need for me, he can think of nothing else. I want this man to bow at my feet and serve me. His pale blue eye locks with mine, causing my core to clench around him from the pure animalistic lust swirling in his gaze. His left eye may be lacking in eyesight, but it does not lack in showing how greatly he desires me. You make my cunt feel so good, Ronaldo, I purr, cupping the underside of my breasts and lifting them closer to his wet mouth. And it's all yours to do whatever you want with. The pupil in his right eye dilates, consuming the blue of his iris until it's nearly entirely black. They remind me of yin and yang, and it's a riveting sight to behold, even more so knowing that I drew that reaction out of him.
You think I need your permission to play with this pretty pussy whenever I please?
He asks, binding his free arm around my back, entrapping me in his embrace.
I would dare to do so with your husband right next to us, forced to watch while I lick you and fuck you, and neither of you could do a damn thing about it.
I had thought he sounded like the devil before, but that was nothing compared to now. His voice is unrecognizable, his eyes too. He stares at me as if I'm a measly mouse caught beneath his paw, and he hasn't eaten in ages. You think so? What if I fought you, pleaded for you to stop? I challenge breathlessly, struggling to keep my eyes from crossing. He groans, nearly crowing at the thought of me fighting him.
It would only be a shame if you didn't cry too.
He responds wickedly.
Those tears would be as delectable as your pussy.
His words are awful, and at first I wonder if he's trying to scare me, especially given what John did to me. But despite the pleasure turning my brain to mush, I soon understand what he's doing. He's testing me, presenting me with a fantasy in which I'd enjoy my power being stripped away. A fantasy that will still keep me up at night, but only because I'm aroused by the thought of it. My skin flushes hotter, and my core pulses around him, driving me closer to the edge. An image sparks in my mind of John and me both tied to our bed, except I'm completely nude with my legs spread wide, and Ronaldo is between them while his cock pumps in and out of me. My husband is forced to watch, and I'm undeniably enjoying everything my phantom is doing to me. I can't breathe, and blackness is beginning to lick at the edges of my vision, threatening to consume me as entirely as the man beneath me. I'll let it, too, just as I'm helpless to stop Ronaldo from doing the same. Ronaldo, I think I'm lost for what to say or how to describe this foreign feeling. There's pressure on my bladder, and it almost feels as if I'm going to soil myself. I don't know what's happening, I whimper, my thighs trembling violently as the ecstasy climbs to a sharp point.
Relax, Mia Rosa,
he soothes.
Your body knows what to do, so just let it happen.
I cry helplessly, overwhelmed with the pleasure, and a little nervous about how my body is going to react.
That's it, baby. You're doing such a good job. Let me see how pretty you look when you come all over my fingers.
Oh, my. Ronaldo, I...
Be a good girl and fucking come for me, Genevieve. Don't make me ask you again.
He snarls, his tone dropping wickedly. My head kicks back, and I'm careening over the edge with a violent scream, though it's no less devastating than the explosion that rocks through me, and I lose my ever-loving mind to it. Faintly, I feel my body seizing above him, shamelessly grinding into his hand as my fingers claw at his skull and tear at his hair. Unintelligible sounds pour from my lips because I'm either unable to form words or hear a damn thing. My body is completely possessed, and I no longer control any part of it, not the way it moves or the noises it makes. I'm a slave to the euphoria, and all I can do is succumb to it. His fingers continue to work me, only prolonging my climax until I quite literally am unable to breathe. I think I'm okay with dying in his arms. My God, is it a good way to go? I'm not sure how much time passes before I'm finally given a reprieve. The orgasm wanes, and all awareness comes rushing back in. I'm cradling his head and draped over him, and his face is tucked into the crook of my neck while I mindlessly ride his fingers.
You're so goddamn pretty when you come. Fuck, Genevieve. Keep fucking my fingers. Your pussy is squeezing them so tight.
He bites out the words, his voice impossibly deep and scarcely penetrating the cloud engulfing my mind. Moans and cries spill from my throat, slowly tapering into breathless whimpers as it becomes impossible to suck in a breath of air. Even as I come down, the aftershocks take over, causing me to quiver and jolt against him. My head swims, and my lungs burn from being deprived of oxygen for so long. All the while, Ronaldo continues to croon encouragements in my ear.
Such a good girl. I'm so fucking proud of you, baby.
Butterflies writhe and thrash senselessly in my stomach from his words. And if my brain wasn't so fried, I'd give more of a reaction other than a twitch and a blubbering sound. Eventually, I deflate, utterly spent. Gently, Ronaldo removes his hand and readjusts my underwear. It's only then I realize that wetness is quite literally dripping down my thighs. I lean back slowly, almost afraid to look down. I do, anyway, and my mouth drops from the sight. Not only are my thighs and underwear soaked, but Ronaldo's entire lap and stomach are. He's drenched. His hand is, oh my God, there's a small pool of my arousal in his palm. Flabbergasted, I'm rendered speechless as he lifts his cupped palm to his open mouth and tips it, the liquid dripping into his mouth. His eyes roll as if he's found a pond in the middle of a desert and has only his hands to drink it down. Ronaldo, I screech, finally finding my voice. He grins, his lips and chin glistening. It's the most erotic sight I've ever been privy to, and I'm confounded as to how to react. So I gape at him as he slowly and thoroughly licks his fingers clean. You've lost your mind, I whisper. That only widens the satisfied smirk crawling up his face, and I'm tempted to smack it. The man has every right to feel good about himself, but that doesn't mean he has to gloat about it.
Since the moment I saw you, Mia Rosa.
August 14th, 1944. Shame is what I'm supposed to feel. I feel none of that. Maybe except for allowing my husband to go years without making me feel what Ronaldo did today. My God, I didn't know the human body was capable of feeling something so glorious. And I am a little miffed that it took 35 years for me to feel it just once, especially because John has experienced it all this time, the bastard. But how will I ever stop now? After dinner, Sarah went off to do her schoolwork, and John sat in the living room, drinking a beer and listening to the radio. so I sneaked off to the bedroom and touched myself for the first time. I wanted to experience that feeling again, and I couldn't contain myself. It wasn't as intense as when Ronaldo touched me, but the euphoria was still very much present. Admittedly, it took me a few minutes to figure out what I liked. My mind slipped away, and all I could think about was my phantom, the raw hunger on his face as he touched me today, the filthy words that spilled from his mouth. My fingers took over after that and moved on instinct. It was incredible. And oddly enough, all I want to do is tell Ronaldo about it. See the flames in his gaze as I recount every moment of what I did to myself. Already, I want to do it again. But worse yet, I want Ronaldo to do it again. I fear he has created an insatiable monster, and now he must live with the consequences. A mad woman he has made me. But if this is madness, I don't ever want to be sane.
Chapter 14, The Phantom. August 21st, 1944. There's a reason even the Godfather of Seattle respects Orazio Caserta's rules. He's always been a ruthless son of a bitch. Despite his affinity for peace in his restaurant, he is very much capable of destruction. Truthfully, I never thought I'd see the day where anyone disrespected his rules, but part of me is glad I lived to see it. The photographs splayed out on Angelo's desk would have a weaker stomach purging, evidence of Orazio's work on Manny Baldelli's oldest child, Nico, and Marco Viscuso himself. Turns out, when we had dinner with the Viscusos at Caserta's, Marco had already pledged his loyalty to Manny in exchange for his son, Gabriel, to keep his mouth shut to the fuzz about Marco's operations. But for Manny to accept his pledge, he had one requirement of Marco: whack Angelo. That day at Caserta's, Marco made one last effort to gain Angelo's approval to ice Gabriel, but Angelo refused and unknowingly sealed his fate. So, although it was Marco's men who pulled the trigger that day, it was Manny who put out the contract. Orazio took that as a great insult and punished both families for daring to cross him at his restaurant. "Kid just turned 18 and was getting ready to be shipped off to war," Angelo says, slapping yet another photograph onto his ornate wooden desk before Alfonso and me. Such ugly images to lay upon such grand furniture. Angelo has always had expensive taste. Rococo ornamentation engulfs the office in intricate golden designs that crawl up the white walls to a plafond ceiling. Built-in golden shelves span the wall behind his desk, save for an alcove in the center where a copycat painting of the Mona Lisa hangs. Miniature statues and old books inherited through his family fill the shelves, and Roman mythology paintings make up several art pieces and murals around the room, completed by a diamond-pattern tile floor, each piece a different shade of brown. Angelo Salvatore is a devout Catholic man, which is why he turns away his religious statues when it's time for his cocaine fix.
"Seems that would have been a mercy,"
Alfonso drawls, inhaling his cigarette as he stares at the images with detachment. It would have. Orazio's father, Paris, loves horses, so much so that he owns two derby-winning stallions. He bets on them, too, and so far he hasn't gone home empty-handed. Growing up, Orazio was a jockey in some of those races and became very well acquainted with the beasts. Paris used to call him the horse whisperer for his knack for taming them and getting them to do exactly as he asked, a skill that seems to have stuck with him, seeing as how he got four horses to rip Nico and Marco into pieces.
"Orazio made it clear it wasn't a quick death," Angelo says, chuckling. Apparently, the horses didn't run. They walked, slowly ripping off the limbs from their bodies.
I cock a brow, aimlessly rubbing my thumb across my bottom lip as I stare at the photos. The men's torsos are in the middle, and each of their limbs is placed several feet from where they're supposed to be. I don't need to see the photographs in color to know that barely a speck of the grass beneath them is still green. Somehow, that's not the worst part. No, the worst part is the tourniquets wrapped around each of their remaining stubs, cutting off the blood flow and subsequently keeping them alive for longer. Did he say how long they were alive after? I ask, focusing on Angelo. Yet the sight of Nico and Marco, each ripped into five pieces, is one that will forever be burned into my memory.
Little under 2 hours.
Jesus, I mutter beneath my breath. Marco deserved that fate, but Nico?
Don't feel too bad, Angelo drawls. Manny raised Nico to think that whatever he wanted, he got. That included girls.
My thumb pauses on my lip. He raped them?
Manny had complained on many occasions about paying a few parents hush money to keep their daughter's trap shut.
I nod slowly while Alfonso mutters,
"Those are just the ones who accepted it. The parents that didn't, their daughters were silenced."
Rage burns in my chest, and my finger twitches with the need to unload a few bullets in Manny's goddamn head. So, Marco and Nico were whacked. I state plainly, needing to push the conversation along before I give in to my urges and go looking for Manny this goddamn second. You put a contract out on Manny the moment you heard he was behind the hit, and no one has gotten close enough to get the job done. We've gotten ourselves into several shootouts over the past few months, and now that Orazio got one over on his kid, he will consider them even. You want me to clip him? Angelo glowers, but I know he's reserved all his wrath for Manny.
An enforcer from the Russo family clocked Manny at a rental on the outskirts of town 2 hours ago.
Alfonso supplies woodenly. The Russos are a good family, and they've stayed loyal to us throughout this war Manny began. If they're sure of Manny's presence, then I believe it.
I want him dead, Ronnie.
Angelo bites through gritted teeth. Are you asking me or telling me? Angelo shoots back his whiskey, hissing through his teeth. When he sets the crystal glass down, he meets my stare.
I'm telling you.
I stub out my cigar, smoke billowing between us, but it does nothing to hide the murderous delight shining within Angelo's and my eyes. Then I'll take care of it. August 22nd, 1944. Manny Baldelli's snores could wake the dead. I don't know how his wife sleeps next to him, but she lies just as still as he does. Wouldn't surprise me if she's merely a corpse he keeps next to him. He's always been off his rocker, and it's not something I'd put past him. The bedroom they're staying in is on the bottom floor, with one wall entirely a window, giving me a perfect shot of him. He and his wife, Carmen, sleep on a four-poster bed, Manny closest to the window, and his wife barely visible behind his large body. Normally, a wanted man would never think to leave himself so exposed, but Manny has always had more ego than brains, and he believes he's in a hidden location surrounded by several guards, which gives him a false sense of security. Unfortunately for him, those guards are all dead. I took out each one quietly when the others were out of view. A simple rope around the neck prevented them from making any noise while I choked the life out of them. A mere appetizer to the entree. There's a buzz beneath my skin, demanding more blood on my hands, more souls to release into the ether. Nothing will satisfy me more than watching the life drain from Manny Baldelli's eyes. My Tommy gun is strapped on my back, so I quietly remove it and take aim, uncaring if I hit the possibly alive wife or not. She's collateral damage and nothing more. And then I unload, the unmistakable sound of dozens of bullets firing through the glass, shattering it and startling Manny and his wife awake, their eyes nearly popping from their skulls. The two of them roll toward the other side of the bed and out of shot, though I don't let up on spraying metal, even as I kick at broken glass, making enough room in the window for me to step through. Just as I enter the room, the magazine runs empty. Instantly, I slip the Tommy gun to my back and pull out my pistol, taking aim just as Manny jumps to his feet, his own gun aimed my way. Glass shards catch on my clothing, a few pieces slicing through flesh, but I hardly feel it. I'm quicker and shoot the second he's within sight. My bullet hits him directly in the chest, though he manages to squeeze off a shot of his own that comes within millimeters of my face. I don't even blink. The following silence is almost deafening, save for Carmen's soft cries. I'm unable to discern if they're from pain or terror, or maybe both, but she is the least of my concerns. Carefully, I approach them. Many have gotten themselves killed, thinking they completed a hit, only for their target to still have enough breath to fire off one last fatal shot, determined not to meet Hell's Gates alone. Manny lies on his back, his eyes closed and his chest unmoving, while Carmen cradles his head in her lap. Her response to my presence is delayed, but the moment she notices me, she curls herself over him, renewed cries spilling from her lips. She doesn't appear to be hit anywhere, though I can't say I would consider her lucky.
Please,
she whimpers. I raise my gun and fire off another shot in Manny's chest. His body automatically jerks as the bullet sluices through his muscles and organs, and it evokes a sharp scream from Carmen's throat. Her trembling hands cover her ears, and she begins to rock back and forth, her husband's head still cradled in her lap. Carmen Baldelli is no saint. She's known for beating her staff to death over simple mistakes, and the ones she doesn't kill, she makes them wish she had. Carmen has enough innocent blood on her hands to warrant a single bullet through the brain. So that's what I give her. Her cries silence, and so does the buzz beneath my skin as I finish taking lives for the night. I roll my neck, releasing the tension that has gathered in my muscles since the moment I left Angelo's estate. Then I slide my gun into the back of my trousers and head back out of the broken window, feeling lighter than I felt in months. Tucking my hands in my pockets, I whistle a Frank Sinatra tune as I stroll toward my car, thinking of nothing more than seeing Genevieve Parsons again. Chapter 15, The Phantom, September 10th, 1944.
You know I don't take kindly to not being paid what I'm owed, don't you, Polly?
The rage simmering in Angelo Salvatore's brown eyes has always had a profound effect. It should be photographed, destined to become a cursed image. If you meet that black stare, you're doomed to a terrible fate.
Of course, boss,
Pauly responds mechanically. He stands to my left, solid on his feet, despite being on the receiving end of a vicious glare. I sit before Angelo's desk, keeping my stare pinned just above his head where Mona Lisa is hanging. Alfonso sits to my right, puffing on a cigar and staring at the painting as well, appearing uninterested. However, I know he's hanging onto every word spoken.
This Jonathan Parsons, he can't seem to get his act together, can he? He owes us money. He pays it back, then finds himself in debt again. This is, what, The third time he gambled with Tommy and put himself in the hole?
Angelo looks to me for confirmation. I tighten my lips and nod. John has had to pay off the Salvatores twice before, plus interest. Just barely, he managed to scrape by from the money he makes from his business. But just last month, John got drunk and insisted on playing again, intent on making Tommy owe him money instead. He lost miserably, and this time, he owes Tommy an amount of money he may never be able to pay back.
Ronnie, how much is he in the hole for this time?
Angelo asks, twirling a pure gold box cutter between his fingers, which are adorned in rubies, sapphires, and emeralds, all housed in the same expensive metal. If anyone dared to give him silver, he'd likely shoot them in the face. My friend has expensive tastes. He's down about 15 large, I answer. Angelo pauses, the box cutter glinting in the overhead light. We lock stares, and the slightest snarl curls his upper lip. Then he's swinging the blade toward Polly.
Take care of it. Immediately.
I move my gaze to above his head once more, while Polly asks,
Any particular method, boss?
He waves a dismissive hand and sets down his box cutter with the other.
Don't burn him yet. He's got a wife and kid at home. Take the broad hostage until he pays his dues.
My teeth clench, and decades of practice keep my fists from curling. John Parsons has overstepped, and it's not uncommon to threaten family members to get someone in line. And while being a Don doesn't come without violence, I trust Angelo to treat Genevieve Parsons well. However, I simply will not tolerate my boss kidnapping my girl. Not unless I want to sign a death warrant and put a bullet through his skull.
I expect his payment soon,
Angelo finishes, grabbing a cigar from the tin on his desk along with his cigar cutter. He holds up the tool.
Or I'll be chopping off the tips of your wife's fingers with this.
Polly doesn't react. He's only 25 years old, but he's a damn good enforcer, and ruthless, too. While he wasn't born into the family, he's worked for the Salvatores for years and became a made man at the ripe age of 18. When he was 22, he was drafted into the military and fought in World War II until last year. He was too close to a mine when it detonated, resulting in his losing an arm and eventually being honorably discharged. He wears a prosthetic, but Paulie's missing limb is not a weakness. The kid is very dangerous, and thanks to the unimaginable horrors in the war, he is experienced in the art of masking emotions. Not much phases him.
Of course, boss,
he answers mildly. I'm lucky enough not to have a family like Polly or some of the other men that work for the Salvatore family. When I was 8, my father died in battle during World War I at only 26 years old. Devastated, my mother wasted away in a bottle until she died when I was 20. I never had siblings, and neither did my parents. The only family I had was Angelo himself. He's 4 years older, but we played in the same streets as kids, the two of us bonding over our Sicilian roots and parents that forced us to grow up far quicker than we should have. His father was the Don of the Salvatore family and raised him in this life. As his best friend, I grew up in the family business alongside him. Angelo served in the military as soon as he turned 18, and by the time he completed his service, I was being sworn in. I was only 21 when I lost vision in my left eye to a piece of shrapnel, rendering me unfit to serve.